The head of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, warned in late February. Yazan Al-Kafarno, a 10-year-old with cerebral palsy, died in An-Najjar Hospital in Rafah after suffering from malnutrition. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, a child in Gaza identified as Yazan Al-Kafarno is one of the latest to die of hunger and malnutrition in the besieged enclave since the start of the war on October 7th. According to local media reports, Kafarno died in An-Najjar Hospital in Rafah recently, bringing the total number of children who have died from malnutrition since October to 16. Images and videos shared of Kafarno from March 2nd show him lying on a hospital bed with sunken cheeks. In one video, his father shows a photo of his son before the war looking healthy. He said, before the war he was healthy. He had access to all the food and medical care he needed. When the war started, everything was cut off. This happened to him from the lack of nutrition and him not having important foods. Adding that the photo of him was taken just a week before the war started. Kafarno's family were displaced from Beit Hanun in Gaza to Rafah in the south. Family members told Al Jazeera Arabic in an interview that Kafarno reached a stage where he was surviving on just a few morsels of bread. One family member, Muhammad Al Kafarno, said he was living on scraps of bread we found with great difficulty and brought at extremely high cost. If we couldn't find food, we would give him sugar just so he could stay alive. The main reason he has reached the point where he just looks like bones is a lack of nutrition. According to Kafarno, Yazan reached a point where he needed specific food and nutrients to keep him alive after losing so much of his body weight. However, the family could not get hold of anything they required. Yazan had suffered from cerebral palsy from birth, meaning he had to follow a special diet and take supplements. However, his family said that since the start of the war, he has not had access to any of these things. Journalists in Gaza have documented the death of other children as a result of malnutrition and hunger. Hossam Shabbat, a journalist in Gaza, said that a young girl died after not having access to milk, while another, identified as Heba Ziadeh, died in the Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza from dehydration and malnutrition. Last week, the spokesperson for Ministry of Health in Gaza, Ashraf Al-Ghudra, said that the Israeli occupation is waging a new war on the residents of Gaza, a war of starvation, adding that the number of people dying of hunger and malnutrition was increasing, especially children. He explained that the health system in northern Gaza is now completely unable to meet the needs of the besieged territory, particularly after the Kamal Adwan Hospital was captured by the Zionist regime forces. Gaza is on the brink of famine, the head of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, warned in late February. Philippe Lazzarini wrote on social media, the last time UNRWA was able to deliver food aid to northern Gaza was on January 23rd. At least 500,000 people are facing famine, while nearly the entire population of Gaza, 2.3 million people, is experiencing acute food shortages, figures from the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs show. In late February, at least two babies died of malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza. Aid organizations have warned that the Zionist regime's denial of food and water to the Palestinian enclave may amount to a crime against humanity. Randa Ghazi of NGO Save the Children said Gaza was witnessing the worst level of malnutrition worldwide. She told Middle East Eye, "Pregnant women are not receiving the nutrition and health care they need, making them more susceptible to disease and increasing risks of death during childbirth."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize movies with religious and spiritual and metaphysical themes. One of those movies that we started, in fact, criticizing from the last episode ago, or last week, was Astral. It stands for Astral Projection, and it was produced in 2018, directed by Chris Maul. Well, it's a British horror movie that we tried to criticize, with Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah from the last episode ago. Let's take a listen to a short part of this movie, and then we'll be back and criticize it after the break.
I can't really tell you how to do it. I can only describe how I did it.
Find somewhere comfortable. Rest your eyes. Concentrate on your breathing. You are connected to all that exists. I am empowered to travel wherever I wish to go.
So, astral projection allows you to contact me.
I don't think you should be messing around with that.
why exactly you want to try.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Astral, standing for Astral Projection. It was produced in 2018, directed by Chris Moll, with Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Abdullah. Welcome to the program again.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me again.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the program again.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Again, always a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. Sayyid Abdullah, let me start with you this time in this episode. What are the potential benefits and risks of astral projection?
Well, again, if we assume that there is such a thing, we don't have enough data on that. So it might have been, if it happens, it would be like a single event that happens to selective people, and it's just an experience for them rather than for the majority of people. Mm-hmm. So even let's say if you want to do a scientific work on that, you mm-hmm. won't be able to get much data, because if such a thing happens, it would be a very selective few.
Yes.
So in order for you to understand the dangers and the benefits of anything, you need to do conduct a very lengthy research. Mm-hmm. Since no such a thing has happened, we can't actually say what are the benefits and what are the harms.
When you look up, for information about astral projection or out-of-body experience, normally what you end up finding with is that, that most of the experiments on the part of science were not really conclusive. But the scientists didn't reject the whole reality or existence.
Science don't reject it, but at the same time, they don't accept it, because science only can explain what it can touch and feels and sees.
Yes.
Now, if we assume hypothetically that this is something that can be done, well, at least one of the benefits is that you have the ability to see beyond yourself, or at least beyond your time frame, beyond your scope, beyond the limitation that are imposed on us by nature itself. So we'd be able to extract yourself. Maybe you'll be able to travel through time backwards and forwards.
Exactly.
That could be possible. So these are the benefits. As the harms that I can think of, there's always a possibility, because the body and the soul, the way they created, they link to each other. There's always a connection between the two.
Exactly.
If you sever that connection, then you're pretty much dead. So even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks about sleeping. He said, the ayah says, he takes the souls from the body. فَيَقْبَضَ الَّتِي He holds the one that he wants to take as in death, and then the body dies. And those who been blessed, he gives them another chance.
You know, according to my information, I've been researching on this, in fact, very subject, in fact, for quite a long time. And I've never found any case of death after astral projection.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it could be one of the risks.
About the psychological distress, maybe there are some.
So, like I said, it depends on the
consequences.
It depends on the experience of the people. So, because we haven't done, we don't have an actual research where we bring 100, 200, 300 people, we put them in a room, and okay, guys, you project yourselves outside so we can see what happens. And then we measure after an hour, five people would come. And maybe one don't return, they don't have a percentage.
I see.
So we don't have that. Like I said, so this is just hypothetical. Mm. In that case, it could happen where one not return, and then that's it.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah.
No worries.
Let's take a break by listening to another part of the movie, Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Moll, and then we'll be back with the criticism. Don't go away.
Astral attempt number two.
It doesn't make any sense. Surely you can't record your own spirit.
It felt like a dream, but it was so real.
Don't believe everything you're about to see.
It's a trick.
Ab insidious diaboli. Libera nos domine. It's Ecclesian to unsecure to be fatuous. Libertate.
You brought something here with you.
Back back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sid Abdullah and Brother Yasser helping me as my guest speakers as always. Helping me criticize the movie Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Small. Brother Yasser, what are the ethical or moral implications of astral projections, possibly? Some people, like of mine, for example, Brother Yasser, used to say, he was like one of those people who astral projected all the time. And, of course, he repented from what he was doing. He told me, a couple of years ago, when he used to do the astral projection or AP, he used to leave not only his body, but the town. And he went, to different places, and he violated the privacy of other people. Well, he used to, do it, and he said that, for example, I was on the phone, and I was doing it, and then I used to say, for example, what the other person on the other end of the line was wearing. That's obviously the breach of, which we call it, the violation of the privacy.
I think also one thing that needs to be mentioned that was not mentioned is that obviously when we understand the realms of existence, now unfortunately many people, even though the astral project, have not really understood the realms of existence. Like for example, okay, I astral projected. Does it mean you left the physical realm? Not necessarily. And even right now in the physical realm, there are levels of the physical realm that you and I have no access to.
Yeah, true.
So you haven't left the physical realm. All you've done is that you have manipulated space to a certain level. Or even worse so, another being who has access to a higher realm is manipulating you in time and space. This is one of the ethical things, if you want to speak about, is this. Is there are other beings that have been created, whatever you want to
different
call them.
Different entities or life forms.
Like jinns, for example. Yes. Let's just put it out there. Jinns, for example. Jinns, for example, have the ability to transverse between realms of existence. Generally speaking.
From the physical to the astral.
Not the astral, again.
And also mental realm. But
again, these
above
even again,
that, they can't.
Even
according to Islamic mysticism.
Islam has three realms of existence. You have the realm of the intellect, the realm of imagination or barzakh ilam, and the realm of physicality. These are the three realms in Islamic existence. Now, like I mentioned, the physical realm itself, you spoke about mental, astral may still be in the physical realm. Right?
Yeah, it is.
It is a
actually,
physical realm.
Actually, it is.
So therefore, it has nothing to do
different with
layers. Exactly. It has nothing to do with the higher realm, which is the barzakhil realm. Which has nothing to do with the higher realm.
I was talking about another classification. Even in Islamic mysticism, it's been somehow talked about or discussed by Mullah Sadra, for example.
This is Mullah Sadra's thing.
Ibn Sina,
Even this Ibn Sina. Ibn Sina did not have barzakh. But Ibn Sina had two realms of existence.
Yeah, true.
The barzakh realm came with Sheikh Ishraq, illumination, philosophy. Why? Because he was able to actually travel to that realm.
True.
And he saw that realm. And he saw other entities. And he saw other beings. And he saw cities.
Yes.
And he saw planets.
Yeah. But I'm talking about that kind of classification which go from the top, bottom top, like physical realm, astral realm, causal realm, and the divine realm. There are 3 to 4 realms of existence.
But even then, if you look at 3 fours of existence, you have to classify, is astral part of barzakh or not? If not, then it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. Right. No, I don't have any kind of issues with what you're saying about the astral being a part of the physicality.
Exactly. So all you're doing, you are just manipulating time and space. That doesn't make a difference.
Yes, true.
So therefore, you have not actually done anything. Whereas, for example, if a person is able to attach himself, so therefore this person himself can therefore be manipulated by beings who have access to higher realms, like the jinn, for example, who have
like the jinn, maneuvering around the physical and astral realm. But when it comes to the causal,
because they're not causal realm,
but the divine realm or the causal realm, they can't infiltrate.
I disagree with the use of causal, because the realm of the intellect is the cause of the barzakh realm.
Right.
The barzakh realm is the cause of the physical realm. So for you to say causal, you are making
I'm just talking about that kind of classification which is out there. Of course, it totally varies from or differs from the Buddhist or Hinduist type of, classification, which goes from physical, etheric, astral, mental, causal, spiritual, and divine. This is another different story, actually.
Yeah, but again, so you're saying causal. Mm. What do you mean by causal? Do you mean that this all causes effect and effects come from this realm?
No. By causal, they don't mean cause and effect.
Is this the name of a realm?
Yeah, that's the fine name of a realm. Like the divine, the spiritual realm.
That's fine.
A different thing.
Exactly, yeah. For example. But then, for example, you have to understand that even if you make it into seven, or some make it into nine,
yes,
within the created existence, there are three realms.
Mm-hmm.
Each having a vertical reality, each affecting the other.
I see.
There is no escape from it.
Okay.
Whatever is in the barzakh realm is in the intellect, but in the intellect there's more than it.
Mm-hmm.
Like in any cause and effect.
Yes. True.
The physical realm is the same with the barzakh realm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a person just travels within space and time, it does not necessarily mean that he has left the physical realm.
Yeah, right.
So the thing is that he's seeing things, but in the movie they show that you can't affect it. Okay, fine, I agree. Mm-hmm. If it's remaining within the physical realm, yes, you can't affect.
Mm-hmm.
Or for example, someone can think they can go back in time and change. No, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that's impossible to happen.
Right.
Because, again, as we, lack of a better word, and the Marvel's movies,
yes,
the timeline is something that is really set. It is something you cannot change.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you cannot see it. Right. Again, if you go on into a higher realm, you can see a timeline that is there. What happened in the past, you cannot affect it in order for the future to change.
Mm-hmm.
That is not possible in the reality of the bigger picture. But in your mind, you can do it.
Although the concept of time is subject to various definitions, by the way.
Time is a fourth dimension of the physical realm.
In the physical realm. But when you go above...
There's no such thing as time. There's no time.
Even if there is the concept of time, it's totally different from this physical realm.
Exactly, it's something else.
Yeah.
Because that the time of this world is an effect of a higher time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the concept of time is different.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser, and thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Astral, produced in 2018, directed by Chris Moll. Of course, we haven't finished the criticism of this movie, and hopefully in the upcoming episode, we'll do so. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Begin by getting into a comfortable seated position. When you're ready, softly close your eyes and tune in to your heart in the middle of your chest and a couple of inches inwards. And let all of your awareness center in on this space. Wiggle your fingers and your toes. And when you're ready, open your eyes back to the world around you.
For thought.
Salam, friends, and here is an aphorism from Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, the Prophet's 16th infallible successor. If a person observes his brother in faith performing something evil and does not prevent him in spite of his ability and authority to do so, then he is really treacherous to his brother. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
To avert famine, there must be road access to Gaza's north. Words from the World Food Program. After apartheid Israel turns back a convoy trying to get food into Gaza. Hello everyone and welcome back to Gaza Under Attack. I'm Saeed Bourza. U.S.-Israeli bombs continue to rain down on Palestinians in Gaza as talks for a ceasefire grind on in Cairo, Egypt. Hamas has presented its proposal for a ceasefire agreement to mediators. The Israeli regime has not sent any negotiators to the talks. What will their response be? Lebanon's Hezbollah has launched heavy rocket barrages at an Israeli kibbutzim in the north of the 1948 occupied territories in response to an air raid that killed three civilians in southern Lebanon. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, have called for an immediate and durable humanitarian ceasefire in the besieged territory as the holy month of Ramadan approaches. And apartheid Israel's war cabinet minister Benny Gantz in London after spending 2 days meeting power brokers in Washington. Is this the beginning of the end for Benjamin Netanyahu? In only 5 months, the U.S. Europe-backed Israeli genocidal campaign in Gaza has killed more than 30,000 Palestinians and wounded over 72,000 others. With us on this edition of the program, British-Palestinian student and activist Tariq Othman and Rick Sterling, a veteran journalist working with the L.A. Progressive, Anti-War, and Al Mayadeen, to name just a few. Rick joins us via Skype from the Bay Area in California, USA. Thank you both for being here. I'll start with you, Rick. Biden gave the impression a ceasefire was as good as done and dusted, yet here we are. What do you think are the stumbling blocks to a cessation of violence at the moment?
Well, the main stumbling block is the United States' refusal to demand that Israel stop its genocide. There have been three United Nations Security Council resolutions that the United States alone has vetoed. The latest manipulation and trick is for the U.S. to say that Hamas is responsible, but in truth, it's the U.S. and the Israeli government.
What do you make of the U.S. government's claim of putting pressure on Israel to agree to a truce, albeit temporary, and a captive swap?
Well, I think they definitely want a fig leaf, and Joe Biden and Joe Biden's team realize they're in big trouble because the majority of the population in the U.S. and even more so in the Democratic Party are supporting a ceasefire. So they're out on a limb, but they're so beholden to Zionist forces in the United States that they have to do this dance where they pretend to be calling and pushing for a ceasefire and abhorring the slaughter going on there. But at the same time, they want to give Israel more time to try to achieve their goal, which is not achievable.
Exactly. And of course, they continue to veto UN Security Council resolutions calling for an immediate ceasefire, not to mention the continuing flow of American weapons and money to Israel. Tariq, let me come to you for the next one. How does all of this make you feel that, you know, more than 5 months on, 152 days on, 30,000, more than 30,000 people killed, more than 72,000 people wounded, and yet not an immediate permanent ceasefire?
I don't know, you know, what words there are left to describe
the situation in Gaza right now and the situation in Palestine. Every combination of condemnation and visual imagery and visual description has been used. Every poet has used every last, you know, description they can think of. And I'm not going to better describe that. We as all Palestinians, as all, you know, people who are seeing it, you know, see a genocide unfold with, you know, with our own eyes on camera, on Instagram, on social media, whilst our political class are 100% backing it, we've completely been lost for words. There's nothing that can describe it better than
what kind of action will you take? Because we're in an election year, not just here in the UK, but in the States and more than 50 other countries. When you see this dithering on the part of the political class here, as you put it, be it the conservatives or Labour, someone as young as you and the likes of you out there, how will you get back at these people in power who can stop a genocide but won't or haven't so far?
Well, very simply, I would refuse to vote for any of these supposed representative parties. You know, many people make the comment that if I was to not vote for Keir Starmer or Labour, that would make a conservative leadership more likely. Mm-hmm. The very simple fact is that if we're going to profess to be in a democracy, then I have every right to have a party that represents me. If we are in a professed democracy, why am I being forced and practically to vote for people who we all know don't represent me and have no intention of representing me and the vast majority of the British public, which, as I'm sure you understand, 67%, I believe.
66%.
Support an immediate ceasefire. And yet, like you were saying, there's a complete, you know, undemocratic and extremist attitude towards this that has justified, as we speak, the genocide of my people. And I'm not going to, you know, vote or put my support behind anyone that hasn't done everything in their power possible to stop that.
And the rise in the number of independent candidates and minor parties is probably going to put an end to that political duopoly in Westminster.
Well, I hope so.
That is the hope. Rick, we've passed 150 days, as I mentioned earlier, of this relentless bombardment. What is your assessment of where things stand?
Well, in 1967, the U.S. launched a surprise attack on its Arab neighbors, and in 6 days, they were able to decimate the air forces of those neighbors and win that war. In contrast, we've got 150 days or five full months of Israeli slaughter, massacre, and killing, and they are nowhere near achieving their goals. The Palestinian resistance has withstood this onslaught, this slaughter, and I think the Israeli government is desperate because they can see that their goal of winning a quick victory is not being achieved. They can see that the world is increasingly turning against them, even the West, so that the U.S. is, you know, almost alone. They're not entirely alone. Germany and the U.K. and France are still supporting them, but less and less so. So the pressure is building, and Netanyahu is desperate, and in a way the U.S. is desperate to see this come to an end.
He sure is desperate. There is, of course, divisions inside the Israeli so-called war cabinet. We'll talk about that in a little later in the program. But meantime, the U.S., Qatar, and Egypt have been attempting to hammer out a ceasefire agreement, at least on the look of it, for a number of weeks with seemingly little progress, despite early optimism. Earlier this week, the Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry met his Dutch counterpart for talks where the fate of the negotiations was outlined. Rick, let me come to you for this one as well. The Israelis have not bothered to send any negotiators to these talks going on in Cairo. Does this tell you just how little regard they have for the whole process?
Well, it's an indicator, and it's going to be interesting to see what they report back to the International Court of Justice, because they're coming up on the deadline where they have to report. Meanwhile, their overlords in Washington are in deep trouble. Just as in British politics, we're seeing upheavals with George Galloway winning a landslide victory. 7 days ago, we had a Democratic Party primary race in Michigan, which is a very key state in the United States election process, and over 100,000 registered Democrats voted uncommitted. So this is a sign. Ideologically, Biden is a Zionist. He's dependent on Zionist funds, and yet most of the party is not feeling that way and is increasingly wondering what the heck is going on. So it's the same thing as your guest from Britain was saying, where there's, you know, increasingly a contradiction between democracy and what we're seeing in reality.
Do those electoral developments in the States perhaps explain the Biden administration's eagerness to claim victory in some kind of a temporary truce?
I think they would be very happy to have that happen, but it's a bit of a smokescreen because they're talking about, just like you say, a temporary truce, and whereas other people are saying that we need to have a ceasefire that stops it once and for all.
Correct. And Tariq, Egypt, one of the parties to these ongoing negotiations, could they do more, and could the Arab bloc overall do more to bring an end to this?
I think there's a lot they can do to alleviate the suffering that Gazans are going through at the moment. The borders are still not as open as they should be. There's still not enough aid getting through. And I don't want to say that's the fault of Egypt in so much as it's the fault of the Egyptian leadership, which is an important distinction to make.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can all agree that the Egyptian leadership, just as much of the Arab leadership, is not at all representative of the population of the people in these countries. What we are definitely seeing is a very lackluster response. I think all of us Arab Palestinians are utterly disappointed in what has been, you know, little more than words and messages, and a couple nothing more than sort of virtual signalling, sort of technical achievements of dropping some limited amounts of aid.
Yeah.
When we're talking about the mass starvation of 2 million people right at their border. So of course there's more they can do. So more they could have done over the past, not just since 7th of October, but for the past 50 years or so, that they've sat idly, maybe not completely idly, but for the current regime has sat idly by as they've seen their brothers across the border under siege for decades now. And I can't say I'm surprised, but I'm definitely disappointed.
And yet some of them normalized ties with apartheid Israel,
Egypt,
too,
course,
didn't they?
Jordan. I've normalized ties with Israel.
UAE, yeah.
Yeah, and they've used that, of course, as an excuse.
All right. Thank you for that. That is all the time we have. My thanks to our guest, Tariq Uthman, here in the studio with me, and Rick Sterling. Until next time, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam deena. رضيت بالله ربا وبالإسلام دينا.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers, dear sisters, Salamun alaikum. You are welcome to another episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. As usual, we choose an interesting topic to speak about. For today, we have forgiving and, of course, forgetting in the view of Islam. Today, Friday, is the 27th of Shaban, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 18th of Isfand, 1402 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 8th of March, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is Chapter An-Nur, verse 22nd.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. ولا يأتل أولو الفضل منكم والسعة أن يؤتوا أولي القربى والمساكين والمهاجرين في سبيل الله وليعفوا وليصفحوا ألا تحبون أن يغفر الله لكم وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَّحِيمٌ.
And let not those of virtue among you and wealth swear not to give aid to their relatives and the needy and the immigrants for the cause of Allah, and let them pardon and overlook. Would you not like that Allah should forgive you? And Allah is forgiving and merciful.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The mentioned holy verse is today and tomorrow a great lesson for Muslims and all future generations. When some persons commit a sin or make a mistake, we must not exceed in the limits of punishment. They must be excluded from Islamic society and must not be barred from help so that they resort to enemy and become one of foes. The verse, in fact, portray the balance of Islamic repulsion and attraction. The verses of ifk and the severe punishment of those who made false statements about people's wives compose the great power of repulsion. The verse in question that mentions Allah's mercifulness, forgiveness, and clemency represents the attraction.
Shukran ya Rabbi, shukran. Hadayta qalbi, shukran. Wa darbi, shukran.
شكراً يا ربي شكراً هديت قلبي شكراً نورت دربي شكراً شكراً يا ربي.
Let's go to the topic of this part, to forgive and to forget. Islam teaches human beings to be forgiving, and if someone sincerely asks for forgiveness, the wrong person should forgive him. Our beloved Prophet said, "Whoever suffers an injury and forgives the person responsible, Allah will raise his status to a higher degree and remove one of his sins." Forgiveness in Islam is a virtue of immense magnitude and a characteristic highly encouraged amongst believers. Through forgiveness, we can liberate our hearts from the shackles of resentment, as well as emulate the merciful nature of Allah, our Creator and Sustainer.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. This is Ali, and we are going to talk about the essence and importance of forgiveness. So we see the conduct of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam and the household of the Holy Prophet. The Prophet himself and his household were focusing on the concept of forgiving, or giving in general, and forgiving. We talked about different dimensions of this forgiving and giving thing, and the way that through forgiving one reaches to giving, donating, and even being generous. So this is what we need to learn from the conduct and sunnah and seerah of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. Or at least the least thing that we can learn from them, if we are not able to be like them, forgiving or to be giving, at least we can be in a state not to bother, not to torture, not to irritate those whom we cannot help. At least we can leave them alone and not to bother them anymore. This is the least that we can learn from the statements of Imam Radha alayhi salam and the Holy Prophet and other Imams. So we see that they have been Imam Hassan Mujtaba alayhi salam and Imam Radha alayhi salam, when they have distributed all their money and wealth among the poor, among the needy, when they have been told that you are in a loss, O Imam. Imam, in response, replied that these kind of actions are not known, are not regarded as a loss or damage. Rather, they are a cause of reward in Allah's presence. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, every day for 15 minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every part.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every.
Now we have a short look at how to forgive someone. Listen to lectures and documentaries on forgiveness. One of the ways to motivate us to forgive others is by listening to lectures pertaining to hadith on forgiveness. When we listen to the stories of our blessed Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them all, and how they forgave the atrocious acts of other people, we are more inclined to follow the respected role models and apply it in our daily lives. Another way to ease your mind is to watch short videos or documentaries on strong-hearted people who have the bravery and will to forgive others in Islam. Forgiveness and Islam are the keys to freedom. Let go, be free, and be happy. Now, status of forgiving in Islam on today's special from IRIB English Radio. Forgiving in Islam is a spiritual act. While it has the immediate benefits of resolve and peace, it offers us much more than we can immediately see. The Prophet, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, said, "Be merciful to others and you will receive mercy. Forgive others and Allah will forgive you. By forgiving, you'll gain rewards that will benefit you in your greatest time of need. Gate in Jannah is for controlling anger and forgiving people. Learning to let go and forgive is always challenging and takes a lot of internal work, but that work will position you towards earning greater good in this world and the hereafter."
Thank you. want to forgive, but let's be genuine. And there are a lot of us out there who are nasty people. I'll be honest with you. There are a lot of us out there who are nasty to someone in our lives. Be it a parent, one of your in-laws, maybe a sister-in-law, maybe a sister, maybe a brother. Sometimes we're very nasty to them. And you know what? It's just because we think we have an advantage over them. And so we say bad words. We say cutting remarks. We make people cry. They cry quietly because of us. They cry because of what we said, because of what we've done. They are hurt. Their heart is paining. Those type of people, Allah watches what's going on. Allah knows. Don't think you're a big deal and you're a powerful person and so on. You know, it's very serious. You make people cry. For what? Why did you do that? You know, with your words, you think you are superior, you think you're the boss, you think you're the big person, you think you are the one who can dictate the pace. Not at all. Allah dictates the pace, not you. So if you would like to make someone else's life difficult, I've said it, Allah creates a person or a situation where your life will become difficult, even worse. Just wait for the day. But if we seek forgiveness, we can save ourselves. We seek forgiveness, we can earn the pleasure of Allah. So I thought I'd just share a few of these words with you to say, let's seek the forgiveness of Allah. Let's forgive others as well. You don't necessarily have to forget what happened. You're just a human being. But at the same time, you will always, be a content person because you've let it go. And you know in your heart, I don't hold things, it's fine. I don't have a spot in my heart to hold things against those who've said or did things against me because I ultimately just want Jannah. It's a very high level of thinking because when people do something against you, they can spread rumors, they can do things, and now with social media, it goes far and wide. They've said nasty, ugly things about you, untruths about you. They've spread it, they've said whatever, and it's gone to the whole world. You have an option. You have many options. The best option is just forgive them, let it go, don't hold it against anyone, and just, that's it. I don't want to interact, I don't want to talk to these people, but it's okay, I don't hold it in my heart. I want to have a clean heart when I sleep every night, and that's it. And inshallah, with that, I want Jannatul Firdaus. The reason I say this is because of the hadith where the Prophet pointed out a companion who always looks at his heart and takes out from his heart any ill feeling against anyone else. And he says, well, that man is from paradise. He's going to get paradise. So for me, there's a lot of ways of getting paradise. And we are trying very hard. One of the beautiful ways is just let go of things. You let go, Allah says, we'll let go of all your sins and everything. And we'll give you Jannatul Firdaus. May Allah grant us Jannatul Firdaus. May Allah forgive our shortcomings. أقول قولي هذا والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
Forgiving and forgetting, we should know more and more, and of course practicing them. So inshallah, we follow this interesting and necessary topic on the next episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. So follow us on parstoday.ir, the tab Call of Islam. The archive of all the programs are there. Please find today's special. Thank you very much and have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami. La fata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami. La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.